The air feels electric today. Threatening gray clouds hang just above the long blue hump of the Hakarimata Range in the distance, a range I crossed 2 days ago. The farmer who owns this field locked the gate with a strong padlock, so I'm forced to climb over into a field of black cows and ivory sheep, complaining bleats and moos in all timbres. A lot of drama on the farm today. There are no orange triangles showing me the way in this part of the Te Araroa, but I move quickly over short grass, eaten all the way down to the ground, and pass weird stacks of pancakes-shaped rocks. This is the Kapamahunga Range, more of a plateau high above Hamilton and the Waikato River, where I spent time with Irene, the friend who hiked the first week of the Te Araroa with me. It's not the best day to be out, nor the best day to traverse the highest peak in the area, one that sees wild and rapid weather changes. I hop over a poorly constructed stile directly into Sheep Poo Central, a bit leery that maybe I've come upon yet another diversion for the sake of adventure. When I expressed frustration for the track standard to Bindi, Irene's husband, he suggested we rename the nasty bits of the TA to give ourselves a more substantial sense of accomplishment. Names like Road Warrior Way or the Temple of Doom. This section is more slip, tumble, and slide as I squish through muck of mixed origin, hoping I can climb to the 3,000-foot summit where my first backcountry hut in New Zealand awaits me. And just like that, a ridge in the distance appears, and under a tablecloth of mist is Mount Purongia. You're listening to the P-Rag, Unfiltered Adventures of the Blissful Hiker. I'm Allison Young, the Blissful Hiker, sometime professional flutist, sometime voice artist, and full-time pedestrian. Like the small backpacking essential of the same name, the P-Rag shares the unglamorous but vital truth about empowerment as badass people who really don't need permission to blaze our own trails in this journey we call life. Thanks so much to Lecky Trekking Poles and Belega Socks for supporting the P-Rag podcast. You can read reviews of the gear that I use in my hikes, including a technical P-Rag called Kula Cloth. Also, I've just posted a review of Backcountry Foodie, a partner in thru-hiker meal planning. You can check it all out at theprag.com. Mount Purongia nagged at me over the weeks it would take to walk deep into the center of the North Island. Ever since Irene and I walked the Ratea Forest on day 5, some of the worst mud I'd ever waded through in my life, and all on steep inclines. We had a sunny day when Irene told me this was amateur stuff compared to the mire that awaited me on Purongia. But that's still 2 days away, and I'd visit Irene first after spending the night alone up in the Hakarimata Range, muddy bush dotted with rimu and kauri, and its fair share of long exposed arms of slippery roots amidst puddles. An overgrown tangle of dew-heavy plants whip at me. Even gore scratches across my face, the odd spider web sticking to my eyelashes. A tui greets the morning, and I wonder if Messien knew their oddball robotic song. Squawk, flute, computer. I reach the trig, and it's crowded with chuffed and spotlessly clean runners, because on this side, it stairs all the way down. And I do what any self-respecting thru-hiker would do. I run 373 meters to the bottom. But I do stop long enough to read a sign with a quote from Fred DeVito. If it doesn't challenge you, it doesn't change you. Just as a sweaty Kiwi in a Houston Rockets t-shirt passes me, asking if I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy. He tells me he's walking the TA bit by bit to get in shape and has lost over 100 pounds. Kia kaha, I tell him. Be strong. The mud dries to my pants and shoes on the 10 miles of easy tramping to Hamilton along the Te Awa cycleway. I cross a stunning green suspension bridge, and meet a kiwi spraying gorse, an invasive introduced from Scotland.
Spraying the gorse, got to keep on top of it, otherwise it takes over the country. Then you end up with nice, pretty yellow flowers everywhere.
In town, Irene picks up my filthy self and takes me to their gorgeous farm on the outskirts of town, promising me beer, a hot tub, ice cream, dinner, laundry, and conversation in no particular order.
Yeah, there's some parts that I'd just say, God, I could do without that, I could do without this.
In a lull in our activity, I read a note sent to me from a follower named Tom, who tells me, you and your hiking odyssey personify today's word. That word is actuate. To put into motion or action, to activate, to motivate, to hike. Tom's message goes on to quote New Zealand poet Loris Edmund. It's true you can't live here by chance. You have to do and be, not simply watch or even describe. This is the city of action, the world headquarters of the verb. Edmund lived in Wellington, New Zealand, but any place, Tom tells me, can be your own headquarters of the verb. It has to be. There's no other choice. Life is not about being a spectator, but a participator. Well, I guess I have actuated some things so far, not just in having a vision to walk the entire length of a country and the requisite planning, but also the little things like what I'll carry from town and how far I'll go each day. And today, it's not going to be far. The cows have moved this morning and are grazing literally in Irene and Bindi's backyard. I strip down and take a soak in their hot tub, the sky a watercolor brush of grays and blues. The sale is on in town at the tramping store, and I purchase a merino t-shirt, one that's promised not to carry any odors. Irene eats way smarter than I do while hiking and advises me at the local countdown, organizing in little packets nutritional yeast, LSA power blend, and protein powder, along with tuna, couscous, and mash. And this time, I don't purchase any candy. Hamilton Industry gives way quickly to countryside, where I pass the 800-kilometer mark from Cape Renga, about 500 miles. Bluff this way, it says. Only 2,200 kilometers left. It's hot in this bowl between mountains. New Zealand lives under a hole in the ozone, and that explains my long sleeves, trousers, and hat for protection. I look longingly at the trees in the Taiatua Arboretum, its air-conditioned cool already reaching me. The park is filled with roosters, their crows echoing up and down the winding tree-lined paths as I immediately get lost. Finally back on trail, I cut through easement between two fields, overgrown with huge spiky arms snaking through the fence to snag at me. Black clouds build on the mountains, more mud in the making. Beautiful countryside, but it's hard walking the chewed-up path of thousands of cow hooves. Santana is cranked at the backyard bar and eatery in Fada Fada, located in a tiny triangle of commerce where several busy roads meet. I order a beer from the barkeep, who invites me to set up the alley coop next to the soundstage. We're not allowed to have you camp here, she tells me, but we do it anyway, because we like to know you guys are safe.
A lot of these roads are built on bloody old swamps and shit, you know what I mean? Back in the day.
Right.
And they haven't actually changed.
A tattooed couple, one purple hair and halter top, the other long gray ponytail and beard, wave as I set up my tent. And soon we're sharing a few beers and solving all the world's problems.
And where am I going tomorrow? Perongia?
Yep. Lovely.
Not bad.
Perongia.
Yes. Perongia.
Perongia.
Yeah, lovely. Perfect.
As the sun sets, things wind down, revelers needing to get home and make dinner. I share my Facebook handle with my new friends and promise to keep in touch before I crawl into the alley coop to rest up for tomorrow's big climb. You're listening to The P-Rag, Unfiltered Adventures of the Blissful Hiker. Through sharing my stories of walking long-distance trails as a solo, middle-aged female hiker, I hope I can empower you to grab your life, too, and hike your own hike. You can subscribe to the PRAG for free wherever you get your podcasts. And if you listen on Apple, take the time to leave a review. That really helps others just like you find the podcast. Recently, I had the opportunity to field test recipes from Backcountry Foodie. It's the brainchild of nutritionist and long-distance backpacker Aaron Mayhew. And I say this without reservation, Backcountry Foodie is a game changer in meal planning for thru-hikers, helping you create food that's high calorie, packed with nutrition, while also ultralight and inexpensive. Sounds too good to be true? Well, I gotta tell you, it isn't. You can read my review and sign up for your own recipes at theprag.com. I'll also put a link in the show notes. What a fantastic place to sleep at the backyard bar in Fata Fata. Dead quiet. Until about 4 a.m. when the trucks revved up again in the safe, grassy nook between highways. Last night we toasted to birthdays. I mean, mine is actually in 2 weeks, but everyone got special treatment. It was a sunny, warm, and carefree day yesterday. And in stark contrast to right now, gray and drizzling. 5 minutes in on the trail, and the orange triangular markers disappear, leading to a dead end. But I see Tracy ahead as she ducks into a cutoff in deep grass. Within seconds, I'm up to my knees in a swamp. Nettles sting, and I move like a sloth. A farmer's field is blocked by an electric fence, and a nearly impassable stile spills me out to the road. Sheep graze on the oddly treeless, humpy hills. A couple of chatty cyclists pass me in slow motion. A trail runner, all smiles, comes downhill in pinks and purples. And I think about a time when I was in the Lake District in England, at a summit in a complete whiteout, and I met a person, asking them why were they here. He said, if you wait for the rain to stop, you'd never go out. A cow, a horse, and a goat follow me along the fence, and then their pal, the pony, comes round too, just to say hi. Birds with dandelion yellow heads flit forward on post after post as I approach. A pond rivets as one organism, and a big gust sends several honeybees right at my face. Fortunately, I keep my mouth closed. In an instant, I'm back in bush and scare off a trio of parrots, rear ends in red, blue, and fluorescent green. At the next junction, there's no sign, and I feel like an idiot trying to figure out where to go. It certainly proves the argument that tramping signs are erected by non-trampers. Far ahead, I see a bit of orange on a fence and head for it, finally entering Porongia Forest Park. Well, here I am at the base of that massive extinct volcano and the tallest mountain in the region. A mountain that's been hounding me since the beginning. At first, I feel teased. Things are easy next to Kani Fani Fostream in a forest filled with birds. I take a detour to a rustic campground for lunch and meet a Kiwi who built the boardwalk and tower on the mountain. He gives me a blow-by-blow of what to expect, saying, "Everyone complains about the mud, and we had to build something." But he does warn me that the boardwalks don't exactly cover the entire track. He also mentions a huge storm is blowing in tonight. Staying at a hut sure sounds nice right now, but it's all the way up there at the summit. You know, there's something of life in backpacking. You're never entirely sure what's ahead. Of course, you can read blogs and do your research, but to know just the right site in which to set camp is usually a mystery. Do I camp here and wait out the storm? Or do I climb the mountain now in mist and gray skies? That type of question is one I often wrestle with. And even once I decide to stay put somewhere, I find I have to turn off that nagging, wondering if I'm missing out on something better. American artist Mary Caroline Richards said, "Let no one be deluded that a knowledge of the path can substitute for putting one foot in front of the other." Well, I'm going to have to climb this mountain eventually, and the weather is only going to get worse. Besides, it's only 2 o'clock, and the trail notes tell me it shouldn't take more than 4 to 5 hours. So, better get cracking. I head back into the bush on the Tahanui track, dark already in the gloom, the wind swaying the canopy of Tawa. I get lost momentarily down a rough path of overgrown fern, but double back, walking now with more vigilance. So far, it's a superhighway. But that friendly trail worker assured me the worst of the mud is just below the summit, and that's where my pace slows to a crawl. I get a view out towards folds of Kawikawika-covered mountains, the mist a heavy gray blanket. No wonder the kamahi trees wear moss like a goblin forest. Boardwalks appear on the ridge, and I cheer my trail worker. But then I understand what he meant by not entirely covering the track. They're built like boxes and covered with chicken wire to keep trampers from slipping, and they work really well for the 10 feet that they cover, keeping me out of the epic mud until they re-deliver me back into it.
Oh, shit!
But that section doesn't last long, and it's a super speedway to the summit at 959 meters, but absolutely no view. It's cold when I snap a selfie, and I squish down to the Pauhawatea hut, my pole sinking in at arm's length. Rain lashes at the windows, pattering loudly on the metal roof, and I enter first a mudroom, and I find 8 pairs of muddy shoes awaiting mine to join them. In a large common area lit by candlelight, there are my friends, all bundled up in down coats, surprised to see me this late in the day, and also all by myself. Most of them I've met, the 2 Swiss boys who taught me the importance of Znuni pauses along the way, and a Swiss woman named Chloe, the Dutch couple Floris and Marjolein, who I kayaked with back in Northland, and the beautiful Dutch woman Vera and her friend Elena, plus a chatty Austrian with hair so blonde it's nearly white. We laugh, share stories, and even sing a little before choosing our bunks. Mine's next to the window, and a view of one Dr. Seussian tawari shaking in the wind. It's still light, but I begin to fade quickly and think on something a follower sent me earlier this week, writing, as the old rock and roll poet once advised, "Keep on walking, don't look back." That said, he adds, I'll borrow this thought from Alcoholics Anonymous. During a long, tough, steep, mountainous climb, it's all right once in a great while to turn around and look back, just to see how far you've come. Then, get on with it. What a great few days, walking from one mountain range to the next, deciding to just forge ahead even as the weather moved in. I suppose I could have pushed harder in order to place myself at Parongia's summit in beautiful weather, but that would have meant missing out in a different way, possibly not seeing friends in Hamilton or camping at the backyard bar and mingling with the locals. Walking long-distance trails allows us to be both spectator and participant as the world moves by at a walking pace. I had good weather, and I had bad weather. I had decent track and horrible track. And if I actuated anything in these past days, it was to make a choice to act with conviction and confidence, and maybe even a bit of faith, that at the top of the mountain, there'd be a gang of really nice people seemingly waiting for me to arrive.
Weltrusten. Et de vos rêves.
Slaap lekker.
Gute Nacht und schlaf süß.
Gute Nacht, süße Träume.
Thanks so much to Lecky Trekking Poles for supporting the PRAG podcast. If you want to be a blissful hiker, Lecky should be in your hands. Also Belega, the best blister-resist, non-slouching, foot-massaging socks for the long haul. And thank you also for listening. If you enjoy the storytelling, you can subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts, and you can also rate it and review it at Apple Podcasts. Show notes, gear reviews, and more about my hikes all over the world are at the website, theprag.com. Next week, I learn to live with rain as I continue working my way south through the Waikato on the North Island of New Zealand. Until then, my friends, kia kaha and happy trails.